Okay. So today, what we're doing should be famous to all of you. We're going to do the Yud Gimel Ikarim of the Rambam. As things go, that should be famous. Okay, Rambam doesn't need that much introduction, but he's born in Spain, 1140, dies 1205 in Egypt. His family flees Spain because of the invasion of the Almohads, ends up in Egypt. In addition to being a philosopher, he's a halachist, everyone will look at it. And he's also a doctor in whose court?
Saladin
the Great. He's involved in everything. Writes the Mishnah Torah. He writes several very important hakdamot to Perek Chelek and Sanhedrin, to Perek Avos, to the Mishnah. His many, many important letters. Igeret Chayes HaMesim, Igeret HaShmad, Igeret Teiman, as well as many small letters, which many of them are very important. Philosophically, he's very, very influenced by Greek philosophy, specifically the philosophy of Aristotle, but not exactly. Aristotle, as understood through the lens of the Arabic translations and interpreters, specifically Averroes. That's the Rambam, his biography. It's two pages. So the Rambam really has a lot of very important philosophical things. Obviously, the Rambam is one of the most expansive and most systematic Jewish philosophers that we have. Probably the most important, the most famous thing he did was write the Yud Gimel Ikarim. So that's what we're going to do first, is the Yud Gimel Ikarim. I haven't decided yet, and we'll decide at the end of, wait till the end, and then we'll decide whether we do 2-3 weeks on Rambam now, or we do 2-3 weeks on Ikarim now, and organize it by that, because there are more than one Rishon who wrote Ikarim, and they're all important for comparing and contrast. After we do the Ikarim, you'll tell me which one you want to do. Later, we'll get, I think what we'll do with Rambam is do the Ikarim, probably his basic theory of Sefer HaMitzvah, of Tamei HaMitzvos, which relates to his theories about Olam Haba, which we'll touch on even today. Probably a third one. I'll have to decide exactly what we do with Rambam. But we'll start with Yud Gimel Ikarim, okay? So Yud Gimel Ikarim, everyone knows them, or knows of them. The Rambam writes it, Toch Kedei, a commentary on the Mishnah on the 10th parak or 11th parak, depending on the count, of Sanhedrin, Kol Yisrael Yishlam Chelo Kolam Abba, all of Yisrael has a portion of the world to come, Shnamar Vameich Kulam Sadikim, Lolam Yershu Aretz, Netzer Mata'ai, Masei Yodai Lihisba'er. Ve'elu she'ein lehem chelak lo'olam haba. And these are the people who don't have a portion of the world to come. Ha'omer ein tchias ha'meisim in haTorah. People say there is no resurrection, or alternatively, as the Miuchas L'Rashi says here, that even if there is tchias ha'meisim, but you don't think it has a source in the Torah. Ve'ein Torah min ha'shamayim. My Torah is not from heaven. Va'pi kores. We'll leave that undefined for now. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Ava Kari Bitzor Machitonim, Aloche Shalamaka, Vomer Kol Machla, Shasamdi, and Tremel Simul Echa, Yashim Rof Echa, Vashalom Rafa Hoget, Hashem Beos Yosef. Okay. So the Rambam writes a lot in his Akdama to Chelek. The first thing he does is divide the world into different types of people, how they understand Agadata, how they understand philosophical principles, into simpletons and wise men and kofrim, and he has a whole analysis there on how people understand philosophy, how they understand Agadata. It's very important. And then he uses that as a background to the Yud Gimel Ikarim. Pshuto Kibashmo, the reason he puts it here is as a form of parshanut, right? The Mishnah had said that everyone has a portion of the world to come unless you deny certain fundamental beliefs. So now the Rambam gets to tell you what a fundamental belief is. A little bit of background is necessary. The Rambam, we'll get to this a little bit more, but his theory of Olam Haba is less as an active reward, right? God is rewarding you, but rather it's the natural outcome. We'll get to this. The Rambam very much conceives of the ultimate purpose of mitzvot, probably, as being the perfection of the intellect, perfection of understanding of God, and the world to come is where you understand God, and, you know, to the extent that understanding God creates a union and relationship and whatever with God, that's the world to come. It's a natural result. If you fail in this world and you are not, you do not perfect your intellect, then you just can't get the world to come. It's not as much a reward as it is a natural result. That just the nature of the world for the Rambam. We'll see whether we actually delve into the Rambam Shita. But that you need that as background. So partially to spell out what the Yud Gimel, what it is one needs to believe, the very very base level of belief to get to that point. The Rambam spells out these 13 dogmas. So. Before we get into the dogmas, two things you need to know. One is the Rambam is the first person to set out dogma in this way, right, in a very systematic way. It doesn't mean people thought before you didn't have to believe things, but they didn't set it out this way. He's not the only one, and as we'll see, there are serious critiques that are levied against him, both for the very enterprise of setting out dogma and for the dogmas he sets out. Even if people agree, the notion that these should be dogmas is problematic for many people. The other thing you have to know is that the Yud Gimel Ikarim, as we know them, the Yud Gimel Ikarim as Rambam writes them, are not exactly the same as the Yud Gimel Animamins. The Yud Gimel Animamins are the popularized version of the Yud Gimel Ikarim, but and I put them at the end, but they are not exactly as the Rambam wrote them. There's another popularized version of the Yud Gimel Ikarim, which is Yigdal. Also, not exactly the same as Yud Gimel Ikarim. I put that at the end, and we can look at some of the differences when we get to it. Okay? So, again, the Perush Mishnayos is written in Judeo-Arabic. I didn't give it to you in English, because this was just easier, and the Hebrew is really not so bad. So we'll go through it. Okay, so let's first see what the Yud Gimel Ikarim are. Okay, while we're doing this, I want you to think about the questions that bothered everyone: is why did the Rambam choose these as the Ikarim? Right, not just are these true? That's a second question. But even if they are true, why are these Ikarim? Right, those are two questions you have to ask and think about as we go through them. Okay, so. One last point, and this is just a practical point. We're only going to do really, really a survey of the Yud Gimel Ikarim, but just to show you if you guys want to continue, and this is true of a lot of the things that we've done, this is a very helpful book if you want to delve into these things. Right? This is by Rabbi J. David Bleich, Rosh Hashiva, Rosh Kollel at YU, an expert in everything. One of the things that he did is he organized Al Seder HaRambam, the main passages in translation by all the major Jewish philosophers in the medieval period. So, like, you know, on the unity of God, he'll have the Rambam's position, unity of God, but also have the passages from Emunat Vedeyat by Rav Sajigon, by Rav Bachi and Chobos Alvavos, the Kuzari, Rav Yosef Albo, right, organized. And he has a short introduction, but mostly it's just a translation. It's like a textbook. He has a short introduction to each section, plus an introduction at the beginning. He also has an important introductory article, which is republished here also in a new book, Philosophical Quest, online. I haven't gone through them, but I assume that they're good because everything he does is good. This is probably less dense because he's explaining it. Is, you know, Usher Manning? You've met Usher? British Israeli? Should I bet? Sure bet? Is it next?
No.
Yeah, Usher. The guy with the top hat on Shabbat Zafar?
Yeah.
Leading the choir?
Fantastic.
Anyway, so his father has a very nice website where he puts his shiurim, and he has like a 25 shiur course on the Yud Gimel Ikarim. His source sheets in general are very helpful because he writes them with a outline. His father, Rabbi Manning, Anthony Manning, right? And you see, right, he goes through each of the Karim, has 25 shirim, he's a truncated version of it. I haven't gone through it, but I assume it's very good, and we'll probably give you a survey of positions if you're interested. Okay, so, Hayesod HaRishon, first one. Mitziut habore yishtabach is the existence of God. There is a person, there's a being who exists with perfection of all types of perfection. Vuhu ilat mitziut kolanim tzeim, and he is the cause of all that is created. Right? The Rambam in the Yad in the Sodei HaTorah, when he talks about this, it says that right, the world doesn't need him. The world needs him. He doesn't need the world. Uvo kiyum mitziutam. In the Mora, right, he describes this. What does it mean? Uvo kiyum mitziutam. That with him is the that their existence is contingent on him. And their existence continues because of him. He compares it to a shadow. Right? If God were to disappear even for a moment, everything would just disappear. Right? Their existence is tied to him like a shadow is to that which casts the shadow. If you could imagine that he would disappear, all would disappear. That's what I just said. And if all creations would disappear, he would not cease to exist, nor would he even lack. Everything, angels, people, the constellations, they're all contingent on him. V'zeh yisod rishon asher moreh alav dibur anochi Hashem. The source for this in the Torah, if you need one, is anochi Hashem Elokecha. It's a machlokes rishonim whether it actually counted as a mitzvah or not. The Rambam does, or is it just a precursor to all mitzvot? Hasod sheni, the second is achduto yitale, his singularity, his unity. V'ushezeh ilat akol echad v'lok achdut hamin v'lok achdut hasug. He's unified, not the way an organism is unified, right, where it's one but it has parts. No, it's a, not like a body that's one but has pieces. No, he is unified, a singular unity, right? That no other unity is like his, meaning it's an absolute simple unity, right? Simple as in, right, not made of parts. The source is Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is one, meaning in all meanings of the word one, He is one. Ve'esod HaShlishi, number three, Shlilat HaGashmut Mimenu. He has no physicality. Right? Anthropomorphism is false. Right? He's not a body. No bodily things happen to him. He doesn't rest. He doesn't move. Not fundamentally and not by accident. Etc. Right? He doesn't have any of the physical things. And that's why the Navi says, who could you imagine is like him? Who could you compare him to? If he had a body, he at least would be similar to other bodies. And when in the Torah or in Chazal or in any other sefer they use anthropomorphic descriptions of God, they are only metaphors. Moshe Amru Dibra Torah Kloshen B'nei Adam Ukvar Dibra B'nei Adam Inyan Zehar Bey V'zeh Yisod HaShlishi, and that is the third. And what is the pasuk? Lo Item Kol Tmuna Klomar Lo Yisaktem Oto Bal Tmuna. At Har Sinai we say, Moshe says, remember you did not see any image, any picture. Meaning, lokuf, 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 beguf. That's three. Sadir vi'i, hakadmut. He is beyond time. He is primordial. He's the absolute first. We call him Tzal Zulato, who built he kadmon viachalilav. Anything else is not as primordial as him. And one of the key beliefs of the Torah is that the world was created, meaning God came before the world and the world was created, as opposed to Aristotle, who thought the world and God lived forever together, right? Both existed for eternity, which is something the Rambam polemicizes against the Mordevuchim. Yasro Hashem, and that's why creation is so important for him, right? That it means that God is outside time and comes before the world is not. Yasro Hashem Varu Achar had their Hamuchlat. God created the world after the void that existed. Vizet Tireh, Shetireh, Shani Sovev, Saviv. And then the proof for this is in the Mora. Okay. Fifth, Haysora Chamishi, Shehu Yitalehu Asher Ra'uil Avdol Ramolufar, same Gudolato Mashmautel, is that he is the only one that it is worth praying to, praising, Ve'enosin Kane, Mashlamatim, and you don't pray anything lower than it, Minsyut, Min Amalachim, Akokhabim, Agalgalim, Ve'esadol, Ve'kol Mashur, Hurkav, Behen. You don't pray to angels and the like. This obviously creates, right, problems. This is why the Gra is said to not have said Baruch Hu Nila Shalom, right, in Shalom Aleichem, because you're praying to angels. Chassidim have a problem with this, they really do at some level, Davin. To angels or to avos and stuff like that. And Rav Asher Weiss has a tense defense of it, but at face value, it does seem to go against the Rambam. The Fishukulam Mutvayim, Pilotem, Elam, Shilton, Lobi Chiral, or Tone Talek, all these angelic forces and etc. have no independent will. Vein Osem Emtsaim, Agia Behem Elav, therefore they're not intermediaries. Ela Klapav, Italei, Echavnua, Machshavot, Menichu, Kol Mashazoto. So you should only pray to God. And the warning against Avodah Zarah is the yesod of this, that you shouldn't pray to things or serve things that are not God. Hasodah Shishi, number six, is Hanivu'ah. Prophecy, Huladat, Shazamin Anushi, Yeshim Subo, Ishim Bale Kishronot, Mufutachim, Me'od, Shleimuk Dola, that there are people who are very, very perfected intellectually and in their character, and their intellect is so perfected until they can sort of accept you, until their intellect can join with the active intellect, meaning God. And then God can emanate His Spirit onto them. The Elohim and Nevi'im, that's prophets, v'zohi anevua, v'zohi inyana. Right here, he's not going to explain what nivua is and how you get to it. That's in the Mora and in his Hakdama to Avos in the Shemona Prakim. Now he goes at length in the seventh to say separate. In addition to the fact that there is prophecy, there is a separate yisod that. Is that Moshe's nivua was unique. He is the father of all prophets. You should believe that he reached a higher level than anyone. He became like the angels. Nothing was left between him and God. Right, no physical, no, except for the fact that he was a man. And I wanted to explain. What does pe'el peh mean? What does it mean that he spoke to God mouth to mouth? As long as he's speaking about it, he doesn't get into all the details here, but suffice it to say, in all his other books, he explains exactly what this means and the different levels of nivuah and the malachim and the nature of the malachim, etc. Skip down two lines. So let's come back to the yisod. Let's just say that he's unique, sui generis. But arba hevdelim in four ways. Avdel Rishon, the first is that all other Nevi'im speak to God through an intermediary. Moshe doesn't. The second one is that other Nevi'im speak to God when they're sleeping, and Moshe did it while he was awake, right? While he's in fully cognizant. The third is that that most Nevi'im would become weak when they're overcome by the presence of God. Not so Moshe, who could be not just awake, but in full strength. And the fourth is that all other Nevi'im, they only got Nevuah if God wanted to reveal himself to them. Moshe could approach God directly, right? So those are the four unique things about Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Yesod HaShvi'i is basically that Moshe is unique. He has a different relationship with God than all other Nevi'im. The eighth, let's skip to the next page. Yesod HaShmini, Torah Min HaShamayim, is that Torah is from heaven. The belief is that the Torah as we have it is the Torah given to Moshe. And this is all from God. Right through what we call as a metaphor God's speech. Now this is very important, and we'll come back to this in a minute. Not only is the belief that the Torah we have is from God, but that there's no difference in importance between the psukim that seem to be not be important, like Uvnecham Kush Umitzrayim Ufuru Kenan, and Shema Yisrael Shem Elokeinu Hashem Echad Anochi Hashem Elokecha. They are all equally important. Okay, we'll leave. He's a little bit here about Menashe, and then he just says, right, every letter and every word has amazing things from God. Fine. Okay, that's the eighth. V'yisod ha'tshi'i hu ha'bitul. Right, the ninth is that the Torah will never be changed. Nothing will be added, subtracted. And there's a special chiyuv for that. Don't add, don't subtract. The tenth, right, God knows everything, omniscience. And not the deistic view that God has left the world, right? The he made the clock and then let it go. Rather, God actually is omniscient, actually cares and punishes. Punishment and reward is number 11. Right? That is number 11 is reward and punishment. The 12th is Mashiach. Hu la'aminu la'meit she'avo. You have to believe that he will come. Ve'en lo marshin et acher yitmameh hakelo. And don't say he's coming, it's taking too long. Rather, wait for him. Ve'en l'kol lo'zman. Don't set when he's going to come. V'lo l'faresh mikra'ok lo'zman zman. Oh, don't try to figure out from Sukkim when he's coming. Right, just believe that he is coming. And anyone who doubts this is contradicting the Torah. And part of this is that he will be a king from David, because all kings come from David. And anyone who denies even that aspect, that he's from David, is Kovar B'tchias Mashiach. On the 13th, which he spent most of this parak describing, is B'tchias HaMeisim. It said there will be a resurrection. Okay? So that is the 13th. Fine, now let's just read his description of why he wrote these down, and then we'll come back to them. Once you believe all these, you are now part of Israel, and all that comes with it. You have to love him, He'll get punishment and reward, but he'll have a chiluk in olam haba. But he's Jewish with all that comes with it. That's the first paragraph. The next one. Kararachti b'dvarim me'od v'yatzati me'inyan chiburi. Jigen lefi shariti shezet toelet b'mona. Right? Even though I've written about this before, you know, in other places, or I will write about it, I've collected it here because I think it'll be very helpful to disseminate it. The Chazor al Dvarai Ilo Pamim Rabot, go over these many times, try to understand them very well. Right? If you think you understand it, go over it again, right? Don't skim through it. Even though we just did, but that's fine. Avish ani lo kitavti ve'ech nizdamin el achar bonenut v'yeshuv adad v'yun b'deyon chanot b'altin nechonot. Right, to understand these, you have to, I wrote it after sitting and thinking about it. Muschum asherik la'min behem u'viro v'tanot rayot kol inyan. Each one has a proof for it, which he provides with more nevuchim. Ein Hashem eshal l'nechodi b'derech emet v'azor l'nyan ha'perek. And then he just says right at the end, right, I said these because all they're really important, and with it you get chelak and olam haba. Fine. So that is right the famous Yud Gimel Karim. Right. So to summarize them again, what are they? God is the creator and ruler of all things. God is unified in a singular way of unity. He's incorporeality of God. He has no physicality, no body. He's beyond time. He's primordial. You can only serve, pray God. That there are prophets, 6. That Moshe is true and unique, is 7. The entire Torah was given to Moshe, is 8. It will not be changed, is 9. God knows everything, omniscience, is 10. Reward and punishment is 11. Mashiach is 12. And Chiyas HaMeisim is 13. Right? Those are the Yud Gimel Karim. Okay. So that's the Yud Gimel Karim. So now that we've seen them, right? Let's start asking questions, right? Why these 13? Right? Why? Right? As many commentators and critics have pointed out, it's very odd. The Rambam in number 8, right, where he said that the entire Torah was given to Moshe, what did he say part of the Emunah of the Torah being from Moshe was? Right? Part and parcel of the 8th for him was that there's no difference between what? Right, not in the, what do you say? The important and the unimportant. So what are you doing listing 13? Right, if someone said, right, Ufud Uchanan is not part of the Torah, according to the Rambam, you are a heretic. Right? Part and parcel, number 8, is that there's no difference between big and small. Right? The Rambam in number 9, right, that the Torah will not be changed, added or subtracted. What does that mean? If I deny tzitzis, so then what? I'm a heretic. So why these 13, right? The Rambam's own rules tell you that these are not unique, right? Or at some level tell you that they're not unique, right? That's one question people ask on the Rambam. Another question people ask on the Rambam is, right, why, right, is, for example, why is 8 and 9 separate, right? The Torah is true and it won't be changed, right? Or 6 and 7. They are Nevi'im, and Moshe's Nevuah is unique. Why are those different? And if you want to say that Moshe's Nevuah being unique is important because it tells you that the Torah is true, so then how is that different from number 8? Right? That the Torah is true. Right? 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 Why are these all different? Why is reward and punishment and God's omniscience that allows Him to reward and punishment, why are those separate? Right? So, right, there's a lot of problems when you look at the Ikarim. Why these, right, why are they counted the way they are? Right, it's a really, really problematic, right, organization in many ways. So what is the Rambam really getting at with the Yud Gimel Ikarim? Okay, this is the problem that everyone deals with. What is it, right? Why are these Ikarim? What does that even mean? So, to that end, what does the word ikar mean?
Essence.
So it could mean
fundamental.
Good, okay. What for the Rambam does the word ikar mean? Or how is the word Rambam, the Rambam using the word ikar?
Principle.
Yeah, dogma, really, is probably the best English word, right? But principles of faith, right? Which is not an obvious way to use a word like ikar, right? But the Rambam seems to be setting up dogma, okay? Now, to sharpen the problem, right, there are at least two other Rishonim who were very famous for having also written Ikarim. One is Rabbi Yosef Albo, who's really channeling Rashbates, Rav Shimon Metzedek Duran, who has three Ikarim. Okay? Albo has three Ikarim. Now, he notes that his three Ikarim include the Rambam's Ikarim, but he organizes them differently. He, as Rabbi Karmi likes putting out, for the Rambam, Ikar is dogma, for Albo, Ikar is foundation. Right? So Albo chooses three. Right? He chooses the existence of God, the truth of Torah, and reward and punishment as the three bases of belief. For him, why does he pick those three? Why would you pick those three? Right, what's unique about those three? Just think about it, right? He says it at the beginning, and maybe we'll do this next week, is what's unique about those three?
I'm not thinking the Torah specifically.
Well, they are. What's unique about those three? Very simply, they are the basis of belief. In what sense? Right? It's very obvious why you pick those three. Without those three, as he says, Torah is incoherent. If there is no God, religion makes no sense. If there's no Torah, our religion makes no sense. Right? And if there's no reward and punishment, then keeping the Torah makes no sense. Right? That's it. Right? The basis, like in the sense of foundation, like without this, nothing makes sense. Right? Those are the three. Now, if you look at Yud Gimel Karim, they can all be organized into that. Right? Within the there is a God, one can put there is a God, and he's singular, and he's not physical, and he's primordial, and you should only serve him, right? The first five go very easily into there is a God, right? The Torah is true, you can put prophecy, Moshe's prophecy, there is a Torah, and it won't change, all into Torah, right? And then you can put omniscience, reward and punishment, Mashiach, and Tchias HaMesim, all into number three, reward and punishment, right? But his organization makes a lot of sense. Right? It's not that he argues in substance on the Rambam as much as he argues in organization. When he decides to make an Ikar, he chooses to pick the fundamentals of faith, the basics, right? The building blocks of faith. So if you look at Albo, it actually is sort of intuitive. That's why you would pick it. Kreskes, or Chazdei Kreskes, takes a different list. He takes six. Specifically, he chooses not to have 13, which are the basis not just of Judaism, but of religion, right? Like God, all religions need God, right? It's not unique to Judaism. It happens to be, we also believe that, but he takes the six that he thinks are unique to Judaism. We can leave aside what he thinks those are, but it also sort of makes sense, right? He decides, well, what is it? Well, what distinguishes us, right? And if you look at the last page here, to Rav Bloich's summary, right, it says, it appears that in complying to a divergent list of principles, Maimonides, Kreskes, and Albo are not so much in disagreement with regard to substantive teachings or the need to accept these teachings as divinely revealed truths, although there do exist disagreements with regard to the nature and status of some of these principles, as they are with regard to what they are endeavoring to formulate. Albo's intent upon formulating a system of axioms consisting of the sine qua non, which is Latin for without which there is none, meaning the defining principles, right, of any system of religious belief. Every theological system must, by definition, posit the existence of a deity. Any such system must embody the concept of revelation, else religion can make no demands upon man, and the concept of reward and punishment must be established in order to provide a basis for compliance with the demands of revelation. Kreskes, on the other hand, is not concerned with the premises of religious belief in general, but with unique claims of faith set forth by Judaism. Kreskes presents the distinctive demands which Judaism makes upon faith and formulates the beliefs which are unique to Judaism. Finally, Maimonides, depending on which explanation is accepted, we'll get to that in a minute, either presents the particular beliefs which require bolstering and reinforcement, or enumerates the minimum content of the theological knowledge necessary for developing of the acquired intellect, which in turn makes possible the reality of immortality. So basically, right, and here he swallowed this, but he explained it earlier in the article, albo makes a lot of sense. What an ikar is, right? It's the things that you need for religion to be coherent. Kreskes makes sense. The six things that you need to make Judaism unique from other religions. But why these 13? So there are traditionally two approaches to this. Okay? One is the... Now, there are many other subversions of it, but I'll take the two main ones, okay? One is the polemical version, right? Which is, it is true that the Rambam thought that, on the one hand, you have to believe Kol HaTorah Kula, and if you deny, you know, Furu Kana'an, you would be a heretic. It's true that some of these Ikarim could, if you wanted to, be collapsed. But the reason he formulated these 13 is not because they're unique inherently, but because they're the ones that need the most strengthening, and polemically in his world were the ones that had to be fought for. What do I mean? Right? For example, why would one decide to make two separate Ikarim about prophecy and the prophecy of Moshe? Right? What would drive one to make two separate Ikarim about Nivuah of Moshe?
People who think that they're the same thing.
What?
People think that...
Yeah, now who specifically?
Jews.
No.
Christians.
No. Muslims. Because what is the fundamental belief of Islam? They believe in prophecy. They believe Moshe was a prophet. But they think that Muhammad's prophecy was unique. And Moshe is just a prophet. And Jesus is just a prophet. Right? But Muhammad is the prophet. Right? So think about it. You live amongst Muslims. Right? It's important to distinguish between prophecy and the prophecy of Moshe. Or, for example, number 8 and 9. The Torah was given to Moshe, and the Torah won't be changed. Right? Who are you polemicizing against there? Christianity. They believe Torah is good, right? So one approach to the Yud Gimel Ikarim is to say, look, in Hachinami, the Rambam doesn't think per se these are unique. If you deny a pasuk in the Torah, a mitzvah in the Torah, anything, you are a heretic. But the reason he formulated this is because these were the ones that were under attack. Right? These are the ones that need constant reinforcement for whatever reason, right? Incorporeality of God. Why is that separate? Because the Rambam felt that there were Gaonim who thought that God had a body and he was polemicizing against them. Right? Why is he stressing that God is primordial? Because he's polemicizing against Aristotle. Right? These are all things that are challenged by people that the Rambam is living within their, you know, philosophical universe. And support for this could be taken from, right, the end of his discussion, where he said, why did I formulate these? Right, what did he say? Right? In order that there would be benefit when you disseminate them. Right? It's a popular attempt, right, to publicize these beliefs. It's not that they're necessarily unique philosophically as much as there's a specific need to publicize these beliefs. So that's one, right? That's the polemical... perspective. There's another perspective, which is that which is presented by some academics, and also within the yeshivish world by the Brisker Rav, and in a different form by Reb Chaim, which is that, and you need a little bit of background that I said before. The Rambam said, right, we said this already, the world to come, what is the world to come?
A result
of your intellectual perfection. So, the greatest gadol and tzaddik is going to have a great portion of the world to come because he understands so much about the nature of God and the like. But, even if that's the goal, what do you also need to do? You need to, right? Not everyone is that, so what do you need to do? Set a minimum, right? What are the minimum number of things you need to understand in order to have any chilek in Olam Haba, right? The way it's quoted from Reb Chaim is that in all other things, let's say you're a Tinok Shenishba, so you don't realize that Shabbos is binding. So, are you a Rasha? No, you're a Tinok Shenishba. But in these 13, as he said in Yiddish, you're an Apikoros, but you're a Nebuchadnezzar Apikoros. right? You're a heretic. It's unfortunate, but you are a heretic. Like, there's a certain base minimum. You don't believe it. You just don't believe it. Now, it happens to me that if this is true in the Gemara, is very unclear, because the Gemara has a case of Tinuk Shenishba L'Avodah Zarah. So it's not actually clear that if that's what the Rambam means, that it actually works in the Gemara, but we'll leave that aside for a different time. But the other approach is that this is a bare minimum of what you need to get into Rambam, meaning the bare minimum of what you need to believe. Now, in addition, the Rambam in general thinks that in order to philosophically believe something, you really need to, as he said, what do you need to do? Think, right? To really believe, you need to think about it yourself, right? And understand all the proofs. But, right, what are you doing by writing a popularized version of them? As the Rambam says earlier in that Gemara, not everyone can directly know philosophical truths with all their proofs. So the bare minimum for them to believe is these things even without the proofs, right? I'll set them out and you'll just know them. If you know them, at least you are at the bare minimum. So those are the two, those are the two most basic positions that are presented. Now, historically, there were people who, like I said, who criticized the entire enterprise of Ikarim. First of all, because they didn't understand why he picked these 13, and why are you writing Ikarim at all? Right? The Abarbanel didn't like it. Like, why would you formulate it? Like, you have to believe the whole Torah. Why are you singling these out? In addition, there were people who didn't believe in some of these. Right? As I said, right, there were some Gaonim who thought, that God had a body. And Rav Moshe Taku famously said, that God has a body. And there were Rishonim, not many of them, but there was at least one Rishon who thought that God didn't know the future, or the present, to be fair, which is the Ralbag, right? And there was one Rishon who thought that there was no free will, being Chasdei Kreskes. So there have been Ikarim which have been questioned. Menachem Kellner and Mark Shapiro both pointed this out. And try to argue that it's very hard to call someone a heretic because each of them has been called into question. I'm not convinced that's a good argument. There does seem to be a certain consensus, at least about most of them, if there's some disagreement about some of the details. But al-regel achas, right, this is the Yogim Likarim, right? This is what we're talking about. And this really does shape Jewish philosophy in a very real way. Because even the people who are rewriting Ikarim are reformulating the Rambam's, right? Rabbi Yisrael Albo, who thinks the Rambam's 13 don't make sense as independent Ikarim, goes out of his way to show you how the 13 fit into his 3. Right? He thinks that his organization makes more sense, but at the end of the day, he's building off the Rambam. And, right, it's not that Kreskes, with the exception of free will, is disagreeing with the Rambam's. He just thinks that one should only talk about Ikarim that are unique to Judaism and not. Now, one of the proofs that people bring that the Rambam thought that these 13 were the unique things you needed to have a chilek in Olam Haba, that the Rambam has a unique position of Malachim, that in order for someone, for a non-Jew, to have a chilek in Olam Haba, he doesn't just have to keep the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, he has to keep the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach because they were commanded to Moshe at Sinai. Right? So people point out to the fact that it does seem to be that the Rambam thinks that these are not just what make it unique to Judaism. If you don't believe these, right, even the ones that sound very unique to Judaism, like the uniqueness of the Torah, you don't have a chelek in Olam Haba, right? Now, another thing that's important about the Gimel Ikarim is that, and the Rambam stresses this over and over throughout all his writings, is that you shouldn't think that what we call nowadays orthopraxy or social orthodoxy or any of those things is a legitimate option within Judaism. Right? It's not enough to just do, you also have to believe. Right? Without them, everything becomes meaningless. Right? The extreme expression of this is the Kovetz Ma'amarim, is Rav Chanan Wasserman, who thinks that if one does the mitzvahs without believing, it's the halachic category of misasig, right? Which is basically, it's like accident. It's beyond accidental. It doesn't even count. It's like tripping, right? And hitting a light switch. You're not even chayav a karban on that on Shabbos because you didn't do it, right? You were an object, not a subject, right? You were not acting at all. You were being acted upon by the forces of nature. If you don't believe, everything you do is hollow, as if it were misasig. Any questions up till now? Right, I think there's a basic survey of what we've done so far of the, there are other you know, minor, there are other reasons why he wrote it. People point out, oh, it's just a parshanut on the mission in here. But these are, I think, the two main approaches. Yeah.
Can you just repeat? Olam Haba is a result of
intellectual perfection.
Intellectual perfection.
Yes. We're going to get to the Rambam's Tamei HaMitzvot, so just keep that in mind. So some people point out that if the ultimate goal is the intellectual perfection, right? So that's the maximum, but you still need a minimum, right? What basic intellectual perfection do you need to get any Olam Haba? And that's, for them, these 13, right? That's the Griz, right? The Briskara. That's also some academics who think this as well, okay? So that's, in a nutshell, the Gemara Karim. Just quickly, one of the things to note is the difference between these and the popularized version of them, which is ironic, considering the Rambam wanted his 13 to be popularized as such. But if you look, for example, on the last page, the Ani Mamin, it's the first one that God controls the world, fine.
Is the difference not inherently Ani Mamin is not the same as an Ikar?
Yes. I mean, the popularized, the notion of an Ani Mamin, yes. But even just the content of it, right? So the first one, God, fine. Right? The second one, that he's Yachid, and in Yechidut Kmahu, sure, that sounds very similar. That he has no body, that's the same. That he's first and last, close, though not exactly, right? It's really that God's beyond time. That you should only pray to him, yes. The sixth, that all Divrei Nevi'im and Met, okay. Shenivuad Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaShalom Haita Amitit V'shu'av Nevi'im, okay. That's very similar. That it won't be switched, yes, except he also adds that it won't be added to or subtracted. That's also important for the Rambam. That he knows the actions of Bnei Adam and their thoughts, yes. That he reward and punishment, yes. Bira Mashiach. Right, he leaves out a lot of the details, right, that are important for the Rambam, such as that he has to be a Melech Ben David, Chiyas Hameizim. Right, they're similar, but there are subtle differences that the Rambam adds, and it's ironic because a lot of the, you know, details for the Rambam is very important in them. Now, one of the differences, now there are different versions even of the Yud Gimel Karim, but for example, one of the differences that does come, right, in the Svardi Nusach, there's a different order. It's much, much more truncated. It reads like this. I should have put that also. Is Harani Ma'amin Be'munush Leimah B'Shlosri Karim Shal Tarak Doshah Shukad Rukum Matsui Mashkiach Hu Echad In Lo Guf Shukadmon Lechol Kedumim. It's very, very, very truncated. There are some differences. For example, the Svardi Nusach of Torah Meshamayim is Torah Nitunah Min Hashamayim, and the Ashkenazi one is Shekol HaTorah Mitzuya Atah B'Yadenu Hi HaNitunah L'Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaShalom, which is very important, right? Because the Rambam made a very, very big point about it. It's not just the Torah is Min HaShamayim, that our Torah in all its details is the same that we got from Moshe, which are not necessarily the same, right? Nowadays, a lot of people are trying to, you know, people who are trying to work biblical criticism into belief, which doesn't really work very well, but are trying to say, nah, I believe vaguely Torah Min HaShamayim, so I'm still within the canon. But for the Rambam, you're clearly not, right? It's not just Torah Min HaShamayim, it's the Torah as we have it in all its details, including the pasuk of Furuchana and etc., is from Moshe, right? You can't get away with this vagary of a Torah Min HaShamayim. So there is a lot which is lost in the truncated versions of the Yigamali Karim. Yeah?
Are these Yigamali Karim seen as halacha?
So that's an interesting question. In the sense that they have halachic implications, maybe, right? And that's the point one of the points Rebleich makes is that these are not just hashkafic. The fact that there's a halachic category of apikores, right? People don't count for a minion, people, you know, you can't touch their wine, or they can't touch your wine, or you can't drink it. At some level, you have to paskin, right? Which is why Rebleich makes what I think is a good critique of, let's say, the Mark Shapiro argument, which is because over the years people argued about some of the Ikarim, therefore we can't paskin on any of them, quote-unquote. Or the argument, you can't paskin on Machshava, or Ashkafa. At some level, it's true that machshava and hashkafa are not as subject to halachic psak as halacha, but at some level, it's not true because it has actual halachic implications. And, you know, Reb Bleich likes quoting the Chassam Sofer, who says that there's a shita in the Gemara, Rabbeinu Hillel, who says that there is no Mashiach. Right? There will be redemption, but there's no Mashiach. Right? God will personally intervene and save us. There's no man, Messiah. Right? So, in Elchanami, Rav Hillel may not have been a kofar. Right? But at some level, once things are canonized and Klal Yisrael accepts it, right, we would have no choice but to treat someone now who believed there was no Mashiach as a kofar. So, at some level, I think it's... You'll hear this a lot, that people say, we can't paskin on Machshava, we can't paskin on Hashkafa. At some level, I think it's just not true. The fact that there are halachic... Even if there were not halachic implications, I think there is at least some process which is similar to Psak, in which Klal Yisrael decides certain things. In addition, there is the problem that the fact that Apikores and Kofar and all that has halachic implications mean that at some level it must be subject to a halachic process. We can quibble, and we really should try to flesh it out. What processes would that be? Because obviously metaphysical truths are different than halachic truths, and they should be decided differently, but at some level it must be a decision-making process, or it doesn't make sense that Chazal assumed there's halachic implications. Right? They're neat, right? You can't say there are implications without saying there's no way of determining it epistemologically. Okay.
And if it is halacha, those people that don't hold like the Rambam...
So the question is, if there is halacha, that doesn't necessarily mean the Rambam's formulations, that everything the Rambam thought was heretical is, right? There's two questions. One is it... Right? There are two arguments that float around. One is that since people argued on it, there really is no dogma. Right, you know, Moses Mendelssohn is famous for saying that Judaism doesn't believe in dogma. Right, there's that argument, which is patently false. Then there's the second argument: is okay, in theory there is dogma, and you should believe certain things, but because people have argued on the different dogmas, limaisa we can't paskin on them. Right, because okay, so the Rambam had these 13, but people quibbled with details here and there, and you know, as long as someone is hanging their hat on somebody, right, they're not a kofar. So. That's an argument that we more have to flesh out, because it's not, I don't think it's true in its extreme, but I think it is true to an extent that the Rambam isn't necessarily the exact final word, right, in every detail of the Yudgimot Karim, but we'd have to, yes?
And last question, sorry. According to that first reasoning, and we said that the Dafka is Yudgimot because these are the ones that are coming under attack and even strengthened.
Yeah.
Does that mean that if those Yudgimot, if one of those Yudgimot, let's say, stop going under attack, They would fall.
I mean, if the Rambam had written them when they weren't under attack, he might not have written as an Ikar. I mean, now it is the Ikar, and you know, whatever. But right, I mean, that, you know, the fact that other Rishonim had different counts points to the count is not canonical. If you think the second version of the Rambam, right, that no, these are the basic minimums to get an Olam Haba, then obviously they wouldn't change. If you think that they were formulated because they were under attack, then yeah, if the Rambam had lived in a different time. Right, he probably would have had yet a separate ikar that said, "And Torah min haShamayim." I don't believe that Torah min haShamayim means it was given in four documents, right, or something like that, right? Presumably, right? If you think that it's they were constructed to respond to their specific time, then yeah, right. As things, different elements were brought under attack, right? If there was a movement, a new religion that believed that, you know, there was no mitzvah of tzitzis, and that was how they defined themselves, then tzitzis probably would have made it into the Ikarim, probably, right? You have to leave soon, because it's 5-2. Just the last thing, just look quickly at Yigdal, you'll see that it's just a poem which basically summarizes, though there are some differences, but just run through it quickly, right? Yigdal, Kim Chai Vishtabach, Min Tzavein, Eit El Mitziyuto, right? That's number one. Echad Vein Yachid Ki Yichudo, is number two. Nelam v'gam ein sof lachduto is some version of three. Ein lo dimud haguf ein haguf is four. Lo narach elav kedushato is five. Kadmon l'chol davar asher nivra is back to four. Rishon v'en rishon l'shuto hino adon olam v'chol notzar yoregidu l'oto malchuto. Shefanu Netano Lanchis Gulato Vitvarto is Nivua, Lokambi Israel Kamosha Od, Naviu Mabid El Etmunato, right, is the uniqueness of Moshe, Torah Emit Natan, Lamoel, Yadnivio Neman Beito, Lo Lachavevlo Yamir Dato, Lo Laminzulato is nine. Yeah, is 9. So Fevia Lusitarik Nu Mabit Lasovta of Arbakad Muto is number 10. Gomeli's Chesed Kimafalo is 11. Notain La Rasha Ra Krishato also 11. Yishlachit Mashikhan of Dod Mechage Gitsishuato. Meitim Mechael Baruch Haso Baruch Adiachim Loto is 13. Right, again, just like we could with the Yukim Karim, we could go through the details where right, the truncated version is not true to it. But right, Rachitida, these are two of the most famous popularizations of the Gemara Karim. Okay.